Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
So hello and welcome to episode 49 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month we have a frankly stunning interview with author Lily Hammond, who was really fabulous to talk to. I had a great chat with her, and you're going to hear that interview very shortly. But first of all, we're going to see what's hot in the US and UK Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as finding out what's going on in the world of lesfic in 2019, a brand new year, and what's going on in the world of me. I know, can you believe it's January already? Well, they're near the end of January, actually. I'm going very high-pitched today, aren't I? Anyway, first up, the Amazon charts. And topping the charts in the US, as I record this, right at the end of January, is Bridget Essex with her book Memory. Now, Bridget is an author, actually. I must get on to reading and I must see if I can get her on the podcast because she's very popular and her books are always very popular with fans. This one is called Memory. It's a second chance romance, my fave category, and it concerns Piper and Estella. Piper grew up poor, Estella rich, but their friendship flourished nonetheless until Piper told Estella her feelings for her way back when and Estella left. Drama, rama, rama. Now, years later, the women have led completely different lives and they meet up again. But can they heal old wounds and get there happily ever after? Apparently, this one is a little bit mystical and magical, but it is number one in the US Amazon lesbian fiction chart, so it must be doing something right. So I haven't read it, but let me know what you think if you do. Also doing well in the US and the UK is the rather unpromisingly titled Sweat Equity. That is a tongue twister. Try saying that quickly. Anyway, by Monica McCallan. Now, this isn't Monica's first rodeo. I do remember a couple of her books being at the top of the charts before as well. So I guess we have to forgive her the title because maybe, I don't know, she thought it would be kind of sexy to have the word sweat in a title. I don't agree, Monica, but, you know, it's doing well, so who am I to say? This one is about Avery and Charlie. Avery is down on her luck. She's just been dumped and she can't even do up her jeans, so she's feeling very fat and, you know, a bit down. Charlie moves to San Francisco from New York for a fresh start after assumedly splitting up with a woman as well. And she ends up flat sharing with Avery. What are the chances? And Charlie's a PT, so I think her and Avery could work together and make them both happy. The two are wary of each other, obviously, but can they break down their walls and find happiness together? And I'm guessing they work up a sweat by the end of it in the gym and in the bedroom. So they have sweat equity. Also doing well, Emma Nichols' book Madeline, still up in the charts. This one is set in post-World War II France and features two heroines called Claudette and Madeline, which frankly is enough for me because French names are just inherently more sexy than British ones, aren't they? This one promises strong leading ladies, smouldering chemistry, and an epic love story. And I don't think you can ask for much more than that within the covers of a book, can you? Also doing well is It's Complicated by Evelyn Darr. Now, Evelyn is a new author to me, and this one focuses on Bailey Torres, who's in love with Caitlin Hunter. Strong, good character name image there. But Bailey's not just in love with her, she's like head over heels. The only problem is Bailey is Caitlin's student. Yes, the old teacher-student love thing rears its head again. But on graduation night, Bailey has one too many tequilas and declares her love for Caitlin. So will love conquer all? Read the book and find out, I'm guessing. Finally this month, also doing well in the charts, is Natasha West's Only Ever You. Now this one is about Jessie, a widow, who is a bit angry about being a widow, frankly, and is ordered into group therapy to deal with her anger and her angle. So far, so not your normal lesbian romance, I'm sure you'll agree. In the group, she meets Annie, who's trying to work through her pathological fear of making decisions. And when they meet, they have a connection. But is there more to this connection than friendship? And does Jessie want it to be? Does Annie want it to be? Can Annie make the decision she wants it to be? So much to unpack. Natasha is well known for her British rom-coms. I've read a couple and they are always worth a read. They're very funny. But this one sounds to me a little darker than normal, but no, none the worse off for it. So that's the chart roundup for 2019. So as I said at the beginning, January already. Where does the time go? Well, I hope your year is going well so far. Mine, frankly, is motoring along. I've seen a lot of people on social media complaining that January lasts too long. I don't get it. I'm a January fan. It hasn't always been that way, I have to say, but over the last few years, I've just found I've got so much done in January. I don't know, I never used to be one of these people who's motivated by a new year, and I still don't necessarily think I am, but something about January makes me happy, really. I know it's cold and miserable, but this year I think we've had some lovely weather. It's been cold but crisp and sunny and beautiful. Anyway, so this January I decided that I needed to get a lot of writing done. So I decided to do a Colin Firth in Love Actually and take myself off, not to Italy, my writing budget doesn't stretch that far, but to Whitstable. So I rented an Airbnb in Whitstable and just switched off everything else that I had to do in my life and just wrote for 4 days. And I wrote 30,000 words, which is pretty darn good. I'm pretty pleased with that. I put my money where my mouth is, basically, and went to Whitstable, the home of Nanking of Tipping the Velvet fame. I walked up and down the beach looking for oyster girls, but I didn't find any, which is probably good because I'm married. But since then, so it was a really, really successful week in Whitstable, and I would go back again in a heartbeat. And the house I rented was lovely, and it was warm and comfortable, which you needed. And it also had Amazon Prime, so I got to watch a bit of Marvellous Mrs. Maisel, which was frankly marvellous. And since then, I've come back and done more of the same. So this January, I'll have written about 70,000 words. So I'm really quite thrilled with that. I will have got the first draft done of this book I'm writing, which is book 6 in the London series called Made in London. But it's going to have to go through a couple more drafts before it goes off to the editor at the beginning of March. So don't expect that one on the shelves till May. But I feel very pleased with myself that I've spent the whole of January really working hard, but really enjoying it as well, and got a lot done. That was the second half of January. The first half, I was putting the finishing touches to my next novel, which is out in March, called You're My Kind. This is a standalone lesbian romance. It's a second chance romance set in Bath and Bristol. And it's the story of Justine Thomas and Maddie Kind. They were a couple in university and everyone thought they were the couple most likely to be destined together forever, until Maddie left without saying goodbye. 10 years later, they meet at a friend's funeral and start to seep back into each other's lives. But why did Maddie leave? Why is she back? And is she sticking around? This one deals with love, death and cake, the three pillars of life, I'm sure you'll agree. And I'm really excited to get out in the world, actually, because I wrote this over November and December. I've edited it in January, and then I'm just waiting for it to come back from the editor, and it will need a little bit more work, and then it should go out in March. Yeah, I've had a super productive January, and I hope yours has been just the same. I've decided as well, after my goal roundup and tallying my goals in the last podcast, that I'm not going to bother doing goals this year. Not ones that I'm going to put out there to hit. I'm just going to refine my processes and really knuckle down. And I think I've demonstrated in January that if you do that, you can really get a lot done. In audiobook news, I've just commissioned London Actually, book 5 in the London series. So that is going to be finished by mid-March. Then I just need to listen to it and upload it to all the various places that I uploaded to: Audible, iTunes, Google, Kobo, and all around, places all around the world. So I reckon it'll be April by the time that's all approved. So we're looking at an April launch date for London Actually, definitely. Finally, in the world of lesfic news, some festival news for you. It's very early in the year for festival news, but this one is the Diva Literary Festival, which takes place between March 15th and 17th. In Birmingham at the Hilton. It last happened in 2017, so 2 years ago, but it was a really, really great festival full of so many different authors from all different Leswick genres. And this year promises exactly the same. There's going to be romance authors, thriller authors, murder mystery authors, literary fiction authors. So people like Stella Duffy, Mary Hannah, hot shots of lesbian romance like Kiki Archer and Claire Ashton. I'm going to be there. I'll be talking about independent publishing, and I'll be talking about what it takes to write a great romance book. And I'm planning on writing 4 of them this year, so I'm hoping I know what that answer is. Anyway, enough of me, enough of Lesfic news. Let's get on with the interview with the fabulous Lily Hammond. I hope you enjoy. So this month on the Lesbian Book Club, we have an interview with the wonderful Lily Hammond. Lily brings you historical romances set in different times and places where adventurous women dare to follow their hearts, defying convention in pursuit of their happiness. Her recent books have included The Way Home and Alice and Jean, and her reviews on Amazon are frankly off the charts. Lily lives in Dunedin, New Zealand, with her partner Valerie. So welcome, Lily.
Oh, hi, Claire. Thanks so much for inviting me along today.
Well, no, it's
thrilled to be here.
No, it's really great to have you. By the wonders of modern technology, it's Harper's Day in London and Harper's 9 in the morning in New Zealand, right?
It sure is, 9:30 on Tuesday morning, so I'm well ahead of all of you.
Yeah, we're doing...
This is your future you're talking to, everyone.
I know.
And it's looking cold.
We're doing time travel on the Lesbian Book Club this month, which we've never done before, so it's like, that's like amazing. So you're saying it's cold in New Zealand today, is that right?
It is. It's the middle of summer, and for the last 2 days we've had to have the heater on because it's cold.
Wow. Yeah, so I was going to say, yeah. it should be your summer now, right? Because it's cold
it
here.
It should be.
Yeah. So is that quite common? Because I know it's quite south. Is it south in the South Island, right, where you are?
Yes, we're pretty close to Antarctica here, and some days you feel it.
Right, yeah. But super, like a beautiful part of the world. I went travelling around New Zealand for a month about sort of 15 years ago, so quite a while ago. But I really loved it and did about half of that all around the South Island, and it's very unspoilt. I don't know if it's still that way, I'm assuming.
Most of it, not most perhaps, but a lot of it is. There's also a lot of rural farmland, particularly where I happen to live. That's what I look out my window and see. Mm-hmm. But if you're willing to drive, you can see some spectacular scenery.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not far to drive. I think that's one of the great things about this country, is that you can actually get round and see quite a lot just, you know, driving quite casually.
Yes, you can. And I remember hiring a car when I was there and driving and didn't see another car for like an hour or so. It's like random.
It's wonderful. Yeah. I can drive into town, which is half an hour away, and maybe pass a tractor.
That is crazy, isn't it? Yeah. But also quite magical as well. So I'm taking it from your accent, you are from New Zealand.
I am indeed.
Yeah. So born and bred and sort of in the same bit of part of the country as well.
I was born in Auckland, so right up the top of the country, and moved down to Dunedin when I finished school, and I've been in the South Island ever since.
Right, okay, it's cool.
Yeah.
So describe what you can see from where you're sitting to us today, what the room you're in, or if you can see out a window.
Well, I'm sitting in the room that is my writing room for the first time ever. Now I have my own room to write in since my youngest kid left for university last year, which was very generous of him to give me his room. And outside the window there is a volcano.
Wow.
Hopefully it's dormant.
Yeah.
We call it our pet volcano because it's a very small, but it's quite obviously that conical shape. In fact, the hill that we live on is called Conical Hill, and there's a row of 3 very small volcano cones.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty typical New Zealand, really, because the whole country is on a fault line.
Yeah.
And volcanoes are really something we do quite well.
Right. Wow. Well, you know, so many firsts today. I've never had anyone say, I'm looking at a volcano. So, although I do actually remember when in Auckland, there's loads of sort of, I don't know, what where volcanoes used to be, or are they still there?
Well, the volcanoes are all still there in mm-hmm. Auckland. The city is sitting on 7 of them, I think. But, yeah. of course, they're all inactive. And yeah. so are the ones out my window.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they better be, because otherwise, you know, it's going to be a little serious.
Yeah. it's very cool, though, to walk around the city and sort of, you know, yeah, go up and down them. Yeah, I remember doing that in Auckland. Anyway, enough about my travels around New Zealand. So, tell us a little bit about your writing journey and how you got started, because I know you've been doing this a little while. You write under 3 pen names, which we'll come on to later, but tell us a little bit about how you got started.
Well, I can't really remember a time in my life when I didn't want to write. Even as a kid, you know, when you were asked what you wanted to do, probably along with anything to do with dogs, was being a writer.
Mm-hmm.
So I had plans right from the start to breed dogs and write books. I never quite got to the breeding dogs, but I definitely got to the writing books.
Yeah.
I started out writing nonfiction in my 20s and got a contract with a publisher in Auckland and put out a nonfiction book. And unfortunately, after that, I got ill and I had small children and things, and so the whole writing journey got put on hold for quite a while. And then I started turning around and writing fiction, which has always been a love of mine, and kind of snowballed from there.
Okay, so when did you start writing fiction then?
Seriously, I started writing it probably 10 years ago, and I started publishing in 2011 when broadband came to town and I no longer had to have dial-up. It's like the whole world opened up and I realized, wow, self-publishing is a thing that I could do.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never even heard of it before that, and so I jumped on that really quickly, and that was 2011. So I haven't looked back since. I haven't been especially consistent because life keeps getting in the way every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I've published, I don't know, 18, 20 novels, just somewhere around that number, maybe a little more now.
Yeah, so just a few. So
just a few.
You've got a few books out there, which is terrific. So you've been publishing since 2011, and I know you write, as I said, under 3 pen names. Probably your first pen name. I don't know if it's your name, but Kate Janae. We're going to focus on Lily Hammond here.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, Lily Hammond writes historical fiction.
And she does.
I read The Way Home in preparation for this interview, which I think is your latest book. And I have to say, I absolutely loved it. It was such a terrific read. Really richly written. And an especially interesting time and place, being based in World War II New Zealand. So
yes, thank you.
Obviously, you're in New Zealand, so that's, you know, why you want to set it there. But tell us a bit about why you wanted to write about that particular time period and that particular story.
Well, I've been puzzling over this one myself, because I've had 2 books set in Second World War now in small towns in New Zealand. I mean, the New Zealand part's obvious because it's easier for me to write what I know and what I see. But I think I'm drawn to that particular time period because it's almost close enough to be familiar to me. It's the time period that my mother and my grandmother and all the family lived in. And growing up in the 70s in New Zealand, I don't think it was all that different between the 40s and the 70s, really. I don't think we've changed that much until recently. And also, with the war, the men were gone. So it was really a time when women could step forward and take more responsibility for their lives and their jobs and what they want to do. I think the world opened up a little for them as well. So you take those things into consideration and it becomes a very rich playground for a writer.
No, definitely. I know I've heard about a few, I haven't read very many historical romances, but the more I read, the more I think I want to read. I know there's been a few books written about sort of World War II in America, but I think it's a very different story, isn't it, writing about World War II New Zealand?
Yes, I think so. And I don't tend to focus a lot on the war so much, but the stories, the very domestic stories at home. I've always been interested in domestic history, which really is women's history.
Mm-hmm.
So that's more the focus of the book, but the backdrop is so rich and the problems and issues and questions it brings up can be interesting to play with.
Yeah. So how much research did you have to do for this? Was it sort of a case of going to archives, or was it a bit of just talking to your family if they're still around?
For the way home, I had to do some research about conscription laws, which is for our American friends, which is the draft. Looking at when conscription started, which surprised me because it was early, very early on in things. Conscription here started in 1940, so right, you know, within the first year of the Second World War starting, we were forcing men to go overseas and fight. And the storyline hinges quite a bit around that and the medical laws and things for exemption from conscription.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually took a bit of searching. Sitting down here in the middle of farmland, it's at the moment, we have two places that we go back and forth to. One is in the city in Dunedin, where my kids are, and then we have our main home, which is down here, 2 hours south, in the middle of farms.
Okay.
So Google was my friend.
Yeah.
Except Google doesn't know much about some arcane things. So it took a bit of searching and a bit of I actually ended up looking at quite a lot of the British laws because we tend to follow those. So that's how that came about. And otherwise, I think mostly it's just having been widely read, having known small towns and what people are like, it all came together reasonably easily.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to like not research heavy, I think, which is another reason that I tend to set things in the 20th century.
Yeah.
Because I'm essentially lazy.
I think I'm with you right there. I have toyed with writing a historical fiction, but the research daunts me. So but you seem to say, you know, as long as you've read enough about it, which is true, I'm sure. Maybe I haven't read as much as you.
And of course, you know, you talk to your grandparents. I mean, my family is unfortunately all gone now, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, there's enough older people around, especially in small towns, who are willing to chat your ear off about anything under the sun, really, particularly
yeah.
how it was like, you know, 60, 80 years ago or whatever.
So, yeah, no, absolutely, I'm yeah. sure. And that is one of the things that struck me when I was reading it, obviously, because it's based in a small town in New Zealand. One of the main protagonists lives on a farm. So I love the community you write about. It felt very real. And I could really picture all the locals in my head. So was, you know, all the places you've lived in throughout your life, was that the inspiration? Do you know everybody around you?
I moved to a small town when I was 30. Before that, I'd lived in suburbs and cities and things. So moving to a small town was actually a complete shock because I never realised that they were like the way they are, where everyone does know everyone else and everyone knows everything about everyone else and everyone takes an avid interest in everything about everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And the scale of drama that goes on in a small town just was astonishing to me. The scandals and all sorts of things. It was very eye-opening. And there are so many characters, you get to see them because, you know, you're only talking a few hundred to 1,000 or 2 people.
Yeah.
And So you get to see the interesting people and how they're all different, and you get to hear their stories, and you get to watch them playing out their dramas and their feuds and their grudges and their love affairs and everything. It's all played out just about in public on the main street, and it's just, it's all right there, humanity in miniature.
Yeah.
So I find it fascinating.
And it's perfect for a novelist.
It is. Very perfect. And I know everyone, at least by sight, and they certainly all know me.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, that's amazing. And I do imagine that, I don't know, one of my favourite TV shows is The Gilmore Girls. Do you watch The Gilmore Girls?
No, I never have.
Oh, okay. Well, that's about a small town in sort of suburban America, and everybody right. knows everybody there. If you ever get the chance, do watch it. It's very good. Anyway, but the other thing that struck me about the book, which, as I said, it's a fantastic read, but your descriptions of things were rich and quite often poetic, actually, which you don't often find in lesfic, so kudos for that. Is this something that you've always had, or something that you think that you've improved on as you've gone on with your writing?
Well, I think once I reached, shall we say, a certain level of competency, I found my voice, and that has always been a part of my voice. It's quite odd because my writing is simultaneously quite spare and yet quite poetically descriptive. So I'm not quite sure how that happened, but I'm quite grateful for it at the same time. I think part of it is that I write poetry as well. Uh-huh, so okay. I have this thing of, you know, condensed meaning. Mm-hmm. And description down yeah. pretty well.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But
Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, I really like to make the reader feel like they are there, like they are close up in the story, and that's a good way of doing it.
Oh, that's really interesting to hear that, actually, because I think one of my New Year's resolutions last year was to read more poetry, because for that reason, just to sort of open up my descriptive mind. Mm-hmm. And it really did shine through and really did stand out, so yeah, it's clearly working.
Yeah I think one of the best things I did for my writing is I went back to university about 10 years or something ago, and I took all the creative writing courses that I could, which was only about 3 of them at the time, but it was short fiction and a poetry course, and mm-hmm. I think that really helped.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You just give me an idea. I might try my hand at writing some poetry now. Maybe that's 2019. I've read it in 2018. Now I'll try and write some in 2019. And I also thought the opening of the book was very strong. You really plunged the reader straight into the story, and you didn't let go. So is that something that you write linearly, or is it something you go back to the start and finesse at a later date?
Well, I don't write outlines or anything. I've never been able to do that. And the couple of times that I've even tried writing a few paragraphs, it never works out like that anyway. So I don't do outlines. I start a novel really with a picture in my head, a scene that is usually the first opening scene, and I don't start writing until I have that scene, and then I just keep going from chapter 1 to chapter 2 right through to the end, and I discover the story as I go along.
Okay.
But that first chapter is incredibly important, and I really believe in making it something that captures the reader right from the start as much as I'm possible of doing so.
Yeah, no, and absolutely, you nailed it with that book for sure. So yeah, and
yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. So as I said in the beginning, you also write as Kate Genet, which are fantasy romance novels, is that right?
Well, that was going to be the plan to do that, but really Kate Janae name has become my catch-all for anything that doesn't quite fit in with the contemporary or the historical romance. And I have a feeling that I'm going to go explore different things. I mean, I've just put out a crime thriller under that name that I had been sitting on for a little while. And that was a lot of fun to write. So I'm not sure whether I could corral myself into doing fantasy romance exclusively or not. Probably not.
Okay. No, I'm getting that. I'm getting that from you.
Yeah.
because of course, as well as Lily Hammond and Kate Janae, you also write as Anna McKenzie, and that's contemporary romance. And I think you've just launched your first book in that pen name. So tell me a little bit about creating and managing three brands, why you chose to do it, and how much work it is. Because I imagine from my perspective, you know, I've toyed with the idea of starting under a different pen name, but I'm always quite daunted by it.
Well, I'm not quite sure yet whether it's absolutely crazy or one of the best ideas I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
It started out with Lily Hammond. I was writing suspense novels, and I hadn't put anything out for a while, and I've just written one that had taken quite a lot out of me, and I thought, you know, I just need to turn around and have a break from this and write something fun. And I had this picture in my head of this woman opening the door to another woman delivering her milk, and the tension in between those two felt really good. So I wanted to write that scene and see where it took me, which of course ended up being Alice and Jean.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I was having trouble with someone from my past who quite actively was trying to sabotage my writing. So I thought, you know, I'll get one step ahead of them and we'll put the book out under a pen name, which will give me some breathing room.
Right.
And also solve the problem of it being completely different to anything else I'd ever tried. And surprisingly, it worked. It worked on all counts. And the name Lily Hammond is a family name, so I quite liked that as well. You know, ties to the past personally.
Yeah.
And it seemed to suit the genre, and the book took off very well, particularly for a historical romance, which I hadn't known whether they would do well at all. And then last year, I said to Valerie, who's my partner, I said, you know, we should do a contemporary romance since we've done the historical ones. And she said, that sounds great. What do you want to do it about? So I was umming and ahhing, and every idea I came up with had suspense elements or spooky stuff or crimey whimey stuff in it. And, you know, that's really Kate Janae stuff. Who is me? My name's actually Kate.
Right.
But Kate Janae writes things that don't fit into contemporary romance. So Valerie said to me, and I'm not sure whether she was joking or not at the time, she said, you know, perhaps you ought to write it under a different name and as a different persona. And I thought about that, and I thought, well, you know, that actually is going to write. If I say to myself, right, you're writing it, what ended up being an Anna McKenzie novel, then you can't stick all that Kate stuff in there, and you have to write what that is. So it was actually a way of compartmentalizing my very busy brain and putting it on the right track. So it's a very odd thing. So now I have three names, and they all write different things, and they're allowed to go wild within their little boundaries,
mm-hmm.
but they can't cross over.
Yeah.
So it just keeps my mind tidy.
Okay. So. That's good. So your mind is tidy, and then all the readers are going, oh, I really like this this new author, and she really reminds me of Kate Janae.
I haven't made any bones of the fact that I write all three of them, that they are all me, and they all have my voice to it.
Yeah.
All the, you know, they're all different types of stories, but they're all my writing in my style with my voice.
Right, okay. Because you did say at one point that you said to your partner, Valerie, we should. So, but does she write as well, or is she just part of the whole process?
And she's part of the process in that I talk to her about it and she talks to me about it.
Right, okay.
And she has been known to say, no, you can't write that story. And she reads along as I'm writing so that I can come to her and say, you know, this is what I'm thinking for this character. And she's an excellent listener and she has a great grasp on story. So it helps me shape the whole thing and process in my head.
She's your sounding board, as many of our partners are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I do tend to say we because it just feels like a we thing.
Yeah, yeah. So and how are you going to treat all these different brands? Are you going to like write one book at a time per brand, or are you just going to do it as the mood takes you?
Well, I am about to start the sequel to The Way Home. So that is a Lily Hammond book, mm-hmm. and I already have another Lily Hammond book that I'm going to be doing this year, but in between those two, I'm going to write another Anna McKenzie book because I came up with this brilliant idea for it about a week ago. sitting listening to Valerie talk to friends of ours about horses, and all of a sudden this whole scene bloomed in my head and everything, so that's going to be the second one.
Okay.
And I think it's going to go like that. I really think it's just going to go what takes my fancy.
Yeah.
And then I'll try and be disciplined about what order I do them in and things.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you're quite excited about all the different ones. So that's great, because obviously that will come over in the writing and to the readers. So that's the main thing, right?
I'm super excited about them all. And it works for me writing several different genres because I tend to have such wide interests in what I read as well as what I want to write, that sticking to one genre, which I know would make sense in a business manner, isn't something that I would be able to do for very long, I don't think. I think I'd drive myself nuts with all these other ideas. So this way I get to actually write them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's cool. Makes sense. Yeah, we'll see. But have you got different social medias and all that sort of thing for them, or are you doing it all from one?
That's the problem. I'm not really competent with social media in the first place.
Yeah.
So no, I've got one. I've got a Facebook personal profile for Lily, which mm-hmm. I do everything on it. Public anyways. Mm-hmm. So, and that works really well because I share lots of pictures of art and things, classical art and things, paintings with mostly with two women in them, and I write subversive little alternative stories to go with them because that just takes my fancy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really quite popular. People are enjoying those posts, which I post about 5 days a week on there. And we have a Sapphic Books Facebook page, but I'm pretty hit and miss on that one. So
well, there you go. You see, you have got a publishing company that's, you know, publishing everybody. So that's good. I'd stick to that. And there's a lot of people who say you don't really need to be on social media that much, really, for these days. So See how it goes, I'd say. So I'm taking it you write full time.
I do, yes. It is my one and only job these days.
Yeah. So what's your process? What's your daily process? Do you write every day? And if you do you have word counts?
Oh, my goodness. I try to work every day. Valerie doesn't really let me. So it's 5 or 6 days a week when I'm writing a book, and I'm really into routine and discipline because I find that approaching a blank page is actually quite an intimidating thing. So I have to be quite disciplined about it. So I tend to sit down at the same time every day in the same place and put the music on and just start writing. And I do definitely have word counts that I want to hit every day, and I can get really obsessive about it. I'm constantly trying to add them all up in my head. How long is it going to take me to finish this? My word count for a day is a minimum of 2,000, preferably 3, and I really like getting 5.
Oh yeah, five is good. Five is good.
Yeah, 5 gets it done nice and quickly. Yeah. But it's hard to sustain. It's very tiring.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but I think two is good, because if you're doing it like 5-6 days a week, that's a lot of words in a week, isn't it? So it sure is. Yeah. And discipline is the way to go. I've just read a great book called Atomic Habits, and that's all about discipline and just daily chipping away at goals.
I've heard of
gets
that
it done. You have heard of it, or you haven't?
Yeah, I think I have. Yeah. Just recently.
Yeah, it's kind of blowing up at the moment in the, you know, productivity sort of space. So I've just read it.
We all tend to keep our eye on.
Exactly.
Don't we?
Yeah. I've just read it, so I'd recommend it. But it sounds like you've got a good process going anyway. So I wouldn't worry too much. And do you have a favourite thing about writing that you do every day, or just favourite thing about it?
I love writing. It seems such a magical thing. I mean, for heaven's sakes, you start out with nothing. You end up with a book, but that book didn't exist, you know, a few months before. It was a nothing. And you are building a whole world that people care about, hopefully, if you're doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And you're making up people that your readers want to know and that they fall in love with, that they hate, that they feel for, that they cry with, that they laugh with, and you're doing it all with how many words are in, how many letters are in the alphabet?
26.
26 little black squiggles on a white page.
Yeah.
You're doing it all that's your tool set. The rest just comes from your mind, and to me that is an incredibly amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel kind of humbled, really, to be able to do that. I mean, I've always wanted to write. So growing up, my heroes were always writers.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm sitting here going, this is what I get to do. How lucky am I? It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. Yeah, definitely.
Yep.
It is amazing to be able to do this, and especially, you know, with all the modern technology now that's enabled us to do it, especially in the lesbian fiction genre, which publishers don't really want to touch. So
it's wonderful that we've been able to not only grow some really great publishing companies out there, but to be able to self-publish as well for those of us who do that, and have so many readers.
Yeah.
Yeah. That are just so supportive all the time.
Yeah, no, it's a great time to be a writer, I think. So a lot of people don't think so, but I do.
I definitely agree with you.
Yeah. So have you got any tips or on the days when you find it hard to get going? Do you have any tricks to change your mindset?
I tend to try and sidle up to it. Think about something else while I sit down, and all of a sudden I'm there in front of the computer and I'm reading through the last couple of paragraphs that I wrote the day before. And I just think, if I can get over that initial 5 minutes or 10 minutes resistance, then I'll get into the swing of things and it will just flow. But I also have to be careful that sometimes I'm just too tired, or there's just too much else going on, and it's okay in those situations not to sit down and write. It's okay to take the day off if I need it.
Yes.
So it's really about looking after yourself and knowing when to push and when to pull back.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, that's good advice. Totally agree with you there. I think mind and body are very connected. So listen to both.
Exactly.
And do you have a best piece of writing advice you've ever been given?
I must have read it somewhere. In fact, I'm pretty sure there's some clever guy who did a really good sounding quote, but it's become to me, I just say, leave all the boring bits out. And that's what I say to myself when I'm writing, and that's what I quite often find myself saying when I'm reading. You should have left the boring bits out. That I really mean is that every detail in a book should move the story along in some way. Whatever happens in it happens for a reason. The characters do say things and act the way they do for a reason. Everything has to be purposeful in a story. You can't just waffle off and run around saying things, writing things because it sounds good or pretty or clever or something. It actually has to serve a purpose to the story.
Yeah.
And then hopefully it won't be boring.
Yeah. You know, I think it's very true. If you're getting bored writing something, then the reader's probably going to get bored reading it as well. So, stop.
And of course, you know, nothing that one particular writer is going to put out is going to please every reader. So you just have to do the absolute best you can. But that's certainly what I bear in mind while I'm writing, is leave the boring bits out. And I have been known to go back and delete 2,000 words. I think I've even done 10,000 words because I went off on the wrong direction and things. So you have to not be afraid.
Yes. Yeah, no, totally. I agree with you there. I get my scythe out as well. So, yeah, all good. So what's next for you then? Is it going to be the next Lily Hammond book?
It sure is. Yeah. I should have started that already, but life has been very busy over this holiday season, so I'll be starting that in the next couple of weeks, and that should be out by the Northern Hemisphere spring, I'm hoping.
So when would that be, like April time, is it, or March, April? Yeah. Okay.
That's the plan.
Okay. And have you made any New Year's resolutions since they were in January?
No.
No.
No resolutions. Just keep writing. What I really want to focus on over the next year or 2 years particularly is consistency, because I've been a bit hit and miss. I've had a lot of health problems over the last few years, so when I start out with great intentions, I often fall down and only put out one or two books or something when I wanted to do more. And so there's not been a great deal of consistency, but I'm learning to look after myself and put health in its place so that I can carry on and work through things better because I'm healthier. So consistency is the thing. I want to do what I want to do, and I want to keep doing it. So the readers out there who say, oh, I'm going to look for everything that she writes, they can actually find some more things.
Yeah, that's always good. And I'm sure everybody who's read Lily Hammond or Alan McKenzie or Kate Janae will be pleased to hear that. So my final question... Yes. My final question. If you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
Let's see. Let's choose Virginia Woolf and Catherine Mansfield.
Ah, very good choices. Why would you choose those two particular ones?
Well, for starters, I really like the modernist writers who were a group of writers writing at the end of the 19th century, early 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because they were somewhat actually in the same position that we are now, in that they're looking at a world that's changing radically. And for them, it was a lot about what seemed the rise of the industrial age and the demise of, you know, Christian beliefs and things, what they were seeing. And I think that looking at the ends of things and new beginnings and things gives a perspective that I really enjoyed. Plus, Virginia Woolf played so much with new forms for novels and things, and just that experimentation and that fearlessness.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that she dealt with in her life, she just kept on writing.
Yeah.
Got her mind.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah.
And of course, Catherine Mansfield is a New Zealand writer, so we're all very proud of her, even though she left for the homeland as soon as she could, for the home country. she moved to England, I think, when she was about 18 or something.
Right, okay.
Not entirely sure about that, but she wrote short stories, and I love short stories. And I love her short stories, and I always have. I've been reading them for years. So they seem like a great choice to me.
Okay, good, good. I'll have to check out her short stories. So where can people find out more about you and your many, many different personas?
The best place to find out everything in one spot is our Sapphica Books website, which is sapphicabooks.com.
Brilliant. All right, well, thank you very much, Kate stroke Lily stroke Anna. It's been really lovely chatting to you and time traveling with you, and good luck with all the books this year. I'll look forward to reading more.
Thank you, Claire, very much. Thanks for inviting me along. It's been a blast.
That's the end of this lesbian book club. So this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you'd like to know more about me or any of my books, the London Romance series, the All I Want series, Nothing to Lose, Twice in a Lifetime, Once Upon a Princess, or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at my website www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on any of the digital outlets. I'm on them all: Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Apple, iTunes, Bella Books, and all over the world. Also on Audible, iTunes, and wherever audiobooks are sold. If you'd like to follow me on social media, I'm most active on Instagram at Claire Fick, or you can find me on Facebook at Claire Lydon, or Twitter at Claire Lydon. I'm so cryptic. Thank you so much to Denise at the Lesbian Lounge for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And join me next time for more hot book club action in February. See you then.